Okay, so I had a weird situation this week. I woke up early and groggy one morning and desperately needed to make a serious cup of coffee to jumpstart my brain. I turn on the espresso machine and I go to the refrigerator and I open the door, and staring out at me from the chilly confines of my fridge is a large disembodied purple head floating above the top shelf where the milk jugs are supposed to be. Good morning, was all my addled mind could come up with for a response to this scene. Hey, good morning yourself, buddy. Today is your lucky day, said the disembodied purple head. Yes, it's a metaphor. Work with me. Allow me to introduce my own self to use. I am the genie of the refrigerator, and I am here to grant you 3 wishes. Oh, man, I said. I really wish I had a cup of coffee right now. Boom! You got it, bud! And I looked down at my shaking hands, and there I was now holding a large mug emblazoned with the Chicago Cubs logo and filled with oily black liquid that smelled wonderful and tasted exquisite. Thank you, genie of the refrigerator, I said. That's pretty good, Joe. No prob, buddy, he replied. But that was an unfortunate choice of words on your part, because now you only got 2 wishes left. The coffee settles my nerves immediately. My synapses are running a little more smoothly, and I lean back against the kitchen cabinet and look back into the fridge at the still disturbingly purple head and assess the situation. And I said, okay, so, Mr. Purple Guy, let me get this straight. You are a refrigerator genie, and you have granted me 3 wishes, one of which I inadvertently blew on a hot mug of Java. I've read stories about this. Solid thinking so far, my friend. You're only half as dumb as you look. So, genie, can I wish for anything I want? Well, not exactly. I'm only a first-year genie in training, so I can only do wishes that apply to you and your immediate family. I can't do anything really huge like world peace. And fair warning, we genies don't take kindly to sneaky wishes like, I wish for 1,000,000 wishes. Not kosher. So don't be Mr. Smarty Pants. Also, I can't do time travel, and I can't do internally contradictory wishes. Like, I wish for a square circle. That'd be stupid, and I can't do it. I would also remind you that all wishes have consequences. So I cogitated a bit. I knew I had to be careful, because I'd already wasted 1 wish on a cup of coffee. I could wish for a Ferrari, but my daughter wouldn't fit in the back very well. I could wish for $1,000,000, but that would be awful showy for a Methodist minister. I would tithe it, of course, but still. So I turn to the genie and I say, okay, Mr. Purple Genie, disembodied head, I'm a Methodist minister. I'm not terribly extravagant or showy, so for my first wish, our second wish, I'm just going to wish for me and my family to have a safe, secure, and comfortable life. And he goes, wow, that is possibly the most boring wish I have ever heard. I would expect something theologically profound, at least, or at least imaginative from a distinguished clergy person like yourself. But hey, your wish is my command. Safe, secure, comfortable. Boom! You got it. Now, what about your last wish, bucko? Better make it good. I suddenly realized that it's the second week of Lent, and I haven't been thinking anything very faithfully with my wishes with the genie here. Just about things and stuff. This is really embarrassing. So I say, okay, my purple Chicago genie in the refrigerator, for my last wish, I want a deeper faith. I want to be a true follower of Jesus. And the genie smirks at me sarcastically and goes, ah, wrong answer. Weasel face, your last wish was internally inconsistent with your previous wish. The internally contradictory clause in your tree wish contract has been violated. I warned you, buddy, your last two wishes have canceled each other out. You lose. You blew it. No wishes for you. But I'm a nice guy. You can keep the Java and the mug, but I'll see you later. And I'm like, wait. What are you talking about? I thought that was a good wish to ask for a deeper faith. What is the problem with that? And he said, look, it was a nice wish. But you can't have it and your other wish at the same time. They are internally contradictory. I asked him if he might explain a little bit. I was getting a little perturbed. What are you talking about? First, he said, you asked for, and I quote, a safe, secure, comfortable life. That's fine. So why do you have a problem with that? I only got a problem with you combining it with your last wish to be an authentic disciple of Jesus. Those two can't be done at the same time. It's like asking for a square circle. It's internally contradictory. You can't have it both ways. Because if you ask for that discipleship thing, you ain't going to get no comfortable life. Your life is going to get itchy and uncomfortable as you struggle and work to change the way you live. Change the way I live, I ask. How? Don't you read the Bible? Said the genie. Jesus never said nothing about his followers being safe or secure or comfortable. He said living like him would get you a cross, which is a decidedly unsafe, unsecure, and uncomfortable thing to get nailed to. Following Jesus don't exactly lend itself to sitting on the couch all day and checking your Facebook feeds. That's why your wishes canceled each other out. You can't have a safe and secure and comfortable life and follow this Jesus guy. You got to choose one or you got to choose the other. I guess I've got a choice to make, I replied. And I guess I got to get me a new fridge because you are out of wishes and I am out of here. So take it easy, buddy, or take it real. Your choice. So the genie in the refrigerator disappeared in a puff of purple smoke, and I was left alone with a half mug of lukewarm coffee and some thinking to do. First, I was wondering why his really bad Chicago accent kept turning into Brooklyn, but I won't. But now I realized a little bit about why Jesus got so upset with Peter, or why Peter got so upset with Jesus. Peter had said, I'm with you, man. You're the Messiah. I'm following along. It's going to be victory and power and rah. But when Jesus let him know that following him would actually rather lead to servanthood and sacrificial love, and suffering, and humiliation, and death, Peter protested. He wanted to be a disciple, but he thought that that led to respect and authority and a cushy life. Jesus let him know that discipleship had a cost, and that cost is a cross. So Peter had to make a decision whether to follow or not, to go back to a safe, comfortably dull existence as a fisherman, or follow the risky, unknown, exciting, challenging, glorious steps of Jesus. It's the same decision that Avram and Sarai had to make. Do they stay comfortable in the land they've lived and the land they know, or do they follow this disembodied voice? I don't think they had a refrigerator back then. To go to a new land. become foremother and forefather of a nation. This morning we're going to be sharing a powerful symbol of the cost of discipleship. Communion presents to us in the symbol of bread and cup the sacrifice Jesus made on our behalf, taking up a cross of shame and transforming it into a cross of life, of love, a cross that says that death is not the last word, and brokenness and oppression and hatred and fear are not the last words, but it is love and it is life. Communion also presents to us the cost of discipleship for us if we say yes to the invitation of Jesus. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Like the genie said, you can't have it both ways. You can lead a safe life, a secure life, with yourself in charge, or you can let go of the illusions of self-sufficiency and risk putting Jesus at the center, risk putting Jesus in charge of your life, playing it unsafe, following his footsteps, putting your life and your loyalty on the line as authentic disciples. So you can take it easy, or you can take it faithful. But you can't have it both ways. It's tempting when you've spent a lot of money getting a divinity degree to talk about all the theology around communion. If you grew up in the Catholic tradition, you heard about transubstantiation, the doctrine that somehow bread and cup become literally the flesh and blood of Jesus. If you're a low church Protestant, you think that communion is a helpful reminder of Jesus' sacrifice. I'm not going to go any deeper into theology than that. We need to ask ourselves what it means for us. Jesus spoke of taking up your cross, about living your faith out, living a love that costs. And if you take that spirit of sacrificial love, the way that Jesus crossed boundaries, broke social norms to reach out to the most vulnerable, to the least accepted, to the ones who didn't count, if you take that love, that connection, that healing, and you distill it, condense it, make it material, I think for us it looks something like bread and cup. And we take that into ourselves. And in that transformation, we're called to live it out. Our calling is to take up a cross, to live a life so love-centered that it's going to cost us something in comfort, in social standing, and certainly in the cool factor. You can't be the same after you say yes to putting love at the center. You may not be told to go to a new land, or get a new name like Avram and Sarai. But will it give you an opportunity to live riskily, to love sacrificially, to resist, as Joshua shared earlier, to resist evil and oppression in whatever guise they present themselves? Most definitely. Your cross is not your annoying Aunt Mabel that you have to put up with. Your cross is not your sciatica that you painfully have to live with. Your cross is costly love. Your cross is vulnerable caring. Your cross is crossing scary boundaries into unknown territories of love. And here in this bread and cup, we somehow experience that love made manifest. Now, my engineer brain does not like to wrap itself around that. And I'm not going to come up with a simple theology to explain it. But what we can do, most simply, is experience it. To taste and see that the Lord is good. Now, here's one of the reasons I'm Methodist. We see communion as a bridge of grace to experiencing God's sacrificial love. Some of you have been to churches where communion was a wall. If you're not baptized, you can't come up. If you don't belong to this church, you can't come up. If you're the wrong color, you can't come up. If you're the wrong sexual orientation, you can't come up. If you're this, you can't come up. If you're that, you can't come up. We practice an open table here where all are invited to taste and see that the Lord is good, because it's not our supper. It's the Lord's supper, and all are invited. And anyone who would put a wall in front of that, they have someone else to answer to. Wesley reminded us that this is a bridge to grace. To remember and to embody the love, the compassion, the forgiveness, the healing, and the love that we've met in the dusty, calloused feet of the rabbi from Nazareth. So come and taste and see.